WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Linguist Jeff Nunberg has some thoughts about how we talk about the approaching millennium. Evocations of the year 2000 have shown up in advertisements, book titles, and a presidential inaugural address.
And so, my fellow Americans, as we stand at the edge of the 21st century, let us begin anew with energy and hope, with faith and discipline, and let us work until our work is done.
You could see why Clinton made a reference to the turn of the century in his inaugural speech. He's got to be thinking that if he plays his cards right, his work may not be done until the year 2000. The year 2000. For people born before mid-century, that used to be a phrase to conjure with. By the year 2000, we'd all be flying to work with our personal jetpacks. Or we'd all be telecommuting to work from our home computers. Or we wouldn't have to work at all. But as the hour draws near, the date seems to have lost some of its magic. I read in the New York Times that by the year 2000, the United States will need 22% more accountants and auditors. Carbon emissions will be reduced by 5%. And the European community will end most of its agricultural subsidies. About the only person who was willing to go out on a limb was a Department of Transportation spokesperson who said that by the year 2000, Amtrak would be self-sufficient. It seems a matter-of-fact greeting for the end of a millennium, particularly when you contrast it with the last time this milestone was passed. In the late 900s, all of Europe was nervously expecting the imminent end of the world and the coming of the Antichrist. Of course, a millennium is a big chunk of time for the modern secular consciousness to grasp. But even the end of the century no longer seems to have much of a hold on the imagination. We don't even have a name for the period we're living through. This is simply the 90s, which will be followed by the aughts or the noughts or the zeros or whatever. But by the last decade of the 19th century, people were already conscious of themselves as living at the fin de siècle. In many ways, that age was strikingly like our own. Self-proclaimed decadents were busy denouncing bourgeois morality. Bourgeois moralists were fulminating about the decay of traditional values. There was widespread anxiety about the social effects of technology, alongside of popular manias for new inventions like the bicycle. It was a time of increasing crime and drug use, of economic crises and political scandals, of feminist agitation, and of disturbing new nationalisms. What's different is that a century ago, people had a vivid sense of living in history at a time of astonishing changes. The 19th century came in as the age of Beethoven, Blake, and Napoleon. By the time it was over, the world knew about communism and anarchism, pointillism and feminism, telephones, automobiles, and the cinema, submarines, and poison gas. And change seemed to accelerate over the following half century as the world of life with father yielded to the world of father knows best. And then things seemed to slow down. What's striking about watching all those 50s sitcoms on TV is how very little the material conditions of life have changed since then. Of course, now there are microchips in the refrigerator and all sorts of wonderful new things in the medicine chest. But people are still driving to work, still eating frozen pizza, still talking on the telephone, and still watching sitcoms on TV. Around the turn of the century, the poet Charles Peguy wrote that the world had changed more in the past 30 years than in all the preceding ages back to the time of Jesus Christ. That was probably an overstatement, but it's hard to imagine anyone now saying the same thing about the 30 years since the Johnson administration. Never mind whether Amtrak will actually be making money by the turn of the century, who 50 years ago would have thought that there would even be any trains left by now? But it isn't that history has stopped flowing, only that we seem to have forgotten that we're swimming in it. The first casualty is the future. The last fin de siècle was the age of the great utopian fictions of writers like William Morris, H.G. Wells, and Edward Bellamy, depictions of bright futures of material plenty and social justice. Whereas what we get now are cyberpunk visions of worlds that look pretty much like the present, except that the streets are dirtier and it's always raining. Even the word futuristic has become démodé, with its quaint connotations of Noguchi coffee tables, the Studebaker Avanti, and Star Trek, the rerun. The future ended in 1965 when the Flushing World's Fair closed down. That's what it means to live in the postmodern condition. Nobody knows what time it is anymore.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist associated with Stanford University and the Institute for Research on Learning in Palo Alto, California.